Okay, I think we may as well get started. This is the session on internationalized top-level domains, in case any of you expects it to be something else. No, okay. Then we'll be locking the doors in about 5 minutes, so if you want to escape, you have to do it now. My name is Carrie Karp. I work at the Swedish Museum of Natural History, where in my responsibilities is the management of the DOT Museum GTLD, and I've also been involved in the testing that preceded the actual delegation of IDN top-level domains. So if you've noticed, if you go to idn.icann.org, you end up at a multilingual wiki, and each one of each language facet of it has its own TLD. It's example.test in 11 different languages, and I designed that, and we operate it from my office. So the first, the 11 unofficial illegal TLDs that the United States government and ICANN agreed to create were my bright idea, but I don't think I'll be in prison for it. And the first of the actual ones, the real ones, is .edf, which Leonid Todorov will be addressing. Unfortunately, one of the intricate situations, .cn TLD. Zhao Dongli was supposed to join us today to speak about that, and he was unfortunately unable to be here, and we don't have a remote connection with him. So what was supposed to be the end of my remarks right now is going to be extended. I'm going to be presenting a little bit of the background of the IDN TLDs, and then Leonid will speak a little bit more, not a little bit more, a lot more in detail about a very specific one of them. And we'll also have, I suspect, a lot more time than we initially had planned for questions and discussions with you. So please listen. I'm realizing that you have opportunity. You will have all the opportunity you want to ask questions, both trivial and embarrassing. We have agreed, since ICANN isn't represented here, the United States government isn't represented here, we're prepared to speak frankly about any and all aspects of this. This isn't being recorded, right? There's nobody here. Anybody here from .se even? Oh, boy. Okay. All right. So I'm failing to be able to hook this computer up to that projector. I'm going to move over here for a few minutes. Is this microphone also on? Yes, it is. Okay. Okay. It's normally said of IDN that it introduces no problems that we haven't seen before, but it magnifies those problems often radically. It doesn't really seem as though that's true. That's an oversimplification. There are issues that arise with IDN that lack counterpart in the ASCII-based namespace, and there are also specific concerns that attach to the appearance of IDN labels on the top level of the domain name system. So things are not just more of the same kind of problem. There are new headaches, simply. And as long as I'm speaking absolutely frankly, you may wish to note that the standards that determine the labels that appear on the top level of the DNS haven't really caught up with this IDN stuff. So almost anytime we talk about an IDN TLD label, we're talking about something that's not entirely in conformity with it was a BCP3, the thing that says that top-level labels must be alphabetic only. And what alphabetic only means in a situation which extends beyond the Latin alphabet is not defined. And it really should be defined before we deal with this. I mean, there are writing systems. Chinese characters don't belong to any alphabet. Yet Chinese characters kind of already exist in the root zone. We'll see that in a moment. Okay, but as far as the DNS itself is concerned, with the exception of what I just said, it's just business as usual. An IDN label is an ASCII string. There's an intricate algorithm that's used for converting what users expect to see, the non-Latin characters, to ASCII strings which are stored, but again, those ASCII strings are not entirely in conformity with the BCP, okay? But it's entirely possible that there's some component of the resolution process that doesn't really expect to see TLD labels that are 59 characters long. And it's very easy to run the full limit of what the number of octets that can be sent out on the wire for a single label with IDN. And many users say, but we only asked for a 3-character label. And they find that, yeah, you only asked for a 3-character label as far as you're concerned, but as far as the DNS is concerned, that's 27 characters. And anybody who is validating TLDs on the basis of their length, hard-coded validation, if it's more than 3-4 characters long, it can't be a TLD. And they're up to 6 now. Dot Museum was another one of my brilliant ideas. So the notion of 6-character TLD labels, which I can assure you, and we invented, we did this 10 years ago, and it still doesn't work right. And that's just the, as the Swedes say, that's just our first name. We're now talking about long labels. That's the one possibility. And the other is simply the delegation mechanisms. The registration mechanisms become complicated because, again, a user expects to see a non-Latin Unicode string. That's my label. And the DNS can't deal with that. And as has been pointed out by many speakers previously today, anything goes wrong anywhere, it's the fault of the DNS and the organizations that operate it. So this is actually a concern to everybody, even those who aren't least bit interested in IDN-labeled TLDs for themselves. Here's the duality. Just as a matter of interest, does anybody have any idea what country names I have on the screen here? The first of them is kind of a giveaway. You can figure that out from context. But the other two, and that's Georgian and Thai. And the Thai is actually in the root. I'm not sure if they, I think they actually asked explicitly for the name of their country. So that last one probably is in the root, if not something very similar to it. And again, if you're validating TLDs on the basis of string lengths, some name holders somewhere are going to be very disappointed. And again, guess who they blame? In the current terminological frame of reference, I suppose it's important to note, IDN was originally put together in 2003 in recognition of the fact that although the DNS is 8-bit transparent and you can send any octet you want, you can put any octet you want in a label, the host name rule rules. Since you can't tell the difference between something that's supposed to be a host name and something that isn't a host name, every registrar, every registry applies the host name rule. And the host name rule, which says alphabetic only on this level, well, that means that those hyphens are illegal characters in a TLD label, and all of the numbers are illegal. I was hoping that Lehman would be in the room. He's the guy who's got stuck with them writing the RFC that sort of explains its way around all of this, and I wanted to know what the status is. But very obviously, nobody is waiting for that very important, but in all fairness, minor detail to be addressed before proceeding. So users, name holders, will expect to see the first of these things, which in terms applied in a protocol revision that was initiated in 2008 and is therefore referred to as IDNA 2008, but was in fact formalized. The RFC editor, the IETF, is it, wrote off on it. No, it isn't the IETF, it's the IESG, wrote off on it in August of this year. So as of August 2010, certain details attaching to this have changed. The terminology that's applied to the first form, the Unicode form of the label, is a U label, and the one that's the ASCII form of the label is an A label. It's by no means that simple, but for the purpose of everything you're going to be hearing from this side of the divide today, you can take it as sufficient. Okay. And we can look here. This is a lead into the next presentation. It's very clear, if we are talking about the explicit name of a country, that .Russia and that Russia are completely different. Anybody can see that it's different scripts. Semantically, it's identical, but they are clearly two different labels. Okay. If we take a look at the CCTLD convention, two characters, and we're talking about an alphabet here, an alphabet that's so similar, so close to the Latin alphabet, that there is argument about whether they really should be regarded as separate. Unicode has treated more heterogeneous situations as though they were one and the same script, which also raises the problem that I was hoping Zhao Dong would talk to us about. But we'll get there, too. So if the Russians wished to have a two-label, international, CCTLD label, it would be, what is it? That's R, and what's the other one? R-U, okay. And the one downstairs is Latin, R-U. So the thing that looks like P-Y is actually Cyrillic characters. The thing that looks like R-U is actually Latin characters. Now, Paraguay happens to have the ISO 3166 code .py. And although it might be, just might be conceivable to have a Cyrillic R-U, which only has Cyrillic labels on the second level, which is something that the top-level registry can ensure if they wish, and to have a Latin-only .py, as we've also heard in this room earlier today, the whole idea behind the DNS is autonomous delegation, not forced inheritance of policies. So, yes, indeed, we can be certain that if we used RU, we could have Cyrillic only to the left of it, assuming that that's what the operator even wanted. But on the third level or lower levels, sooner or later, somebody is going to stick something else into this. There are clear policies that have been articulated, but because we're not operating in the DNS, we're operating with registries that can do anything they darn please, the GTLDs, because they are creatures of ICANN, have to sign all sorts of agreements with ICANN. And they can say, okay, fine, this is a Cyrillic label, and nothing on the level, we will delegate nothing other than Cyrillic labels under it. But even there's no mechanism for propagating that policy. It's counter to the DNS, and even if you tried, how on earth do you police it? So this construct is absolutely, it won't work. And the way it was solved, the way the problem was solved is the subject of the next presentation. Okay. Here's another interesting one. This one actually resolves. This is Hebrew script. This is Yiddish, which is an officially recognized minority language in Sweden. Okay. And this has the interesting property of, I can point. Okay. Everybody knows that we start reading at the left, http://. This, however, is the TLD label. This is the second level label. What happens next reads from right to left. Uh-huh. And this causes confusion even in the speech community. They will argue, no, wait, this is a domain name. We need to have the top level label to the far right. Yeah, but Unicode, of any machine that knows how to render Unicode, will have complete respect for what's called the bi-di algorithm, the bi-directional algorithm. And the bi-di algorithm forces this behavior. Yeah. So, too bad, okay? And it gets cuter, too, because the name that you just saw in the DNS is actually this. And here we're back to the normal world. This is the second-level label. This is the top-level label. Yeah. And if we were to do what people normally do in the URI, soon to be IRI space, you have a slash after the domain name, and then you'll have more stuff that you would expect to be treated as though it were UTF-8. And that's exactly what we have here. And this is the same thing. Beispiel, example, dot test, okay? And this is Hochzeit as a main page. This goes to a wiki that this is the wiki that I spoke about at the outset. And this introduces yet another problem, and that is this is a U and this is an I. And Unicode, our friends at Unicode made a mistake here that they actually admit, that they make many mistakes that they will not admit. This one they do. And that is someone typing at a Hebrew keyboard may type these two characters either as a U, one key press, one code point, and an I, whoops, another key press, another code point, or as a single diphthong. So there's one code point in Unicode that is both of these letters, and then there's another code point in Unicode that's that one, and the third one which is that one, and here's the mistake. In a situation like this, there's supposed to be a canonical decomposition. These two, ultimately, everything maps into this. Not here. And in the Hebrew alphabet, there's not just one situation like this, there are three situations like this. Okay? Now, the important point here is that someone in the user community will look at this and type it. And it will go where it's supposed to go if they typed it the way the name happens to have been encoded, stored. Yeah. If they use the other way of typing it, which is perfectly reasonable, they're going to get an error message, or they're going to go to .com, they're going to end up where they really don't want to go. Yeah. And for someone who understands the language and script, there will be two different representations, two U labels that are identical in appearance, but code to two different A labels. Fun. And the fun increases because if I take a look at what a browser that is confused by this will return to you, you'll get this. This is, after all, the only position where IDN is applicable. So this is correct here, and this is just percent escapes. This is what you're supposed to do. Yeah. Now, it might be argued that the non-Latin-based language communities of the world really, truly do need IDN because it makes it possible for them to understand the identifiers rather than seeing the identifiers just as one great big long string of protocol elements, okay? This is actually what many users will see when they try that little thing that starts at the left and then jumps to the right and comes back to the middle. These are the small problems in all of this, okay? Our Chinese friends, I think this is actually the last slide I have, okay, have an interesting situation. Here's the opposite. We just looked at a case where even if you know exactly what's going on, you'll never understand why this thing is different from that thing. They are identical. I typed it exactly the way I always typed it. And I'm aware of the fact that someone somewhere else might type it differently, but I don't have that keyboard. In the Arabic world, the Arabic script is used for a large number of languages, and there are problems like that are all over the place. And here, this is Shunguo, Middle Kingdom. The first of them is written in traditional Chinese, which the People's Republic of China does not use, but Taiwan does use, Hong Kong uses, and I think Singapore uses. Okay. The one below it is simplified Chinese. Now, these two characters look as though they are identical, and that's because they are identical in every conceivable regard. These two characters look different. You don't even need to know that these are Chinese ideographs to be able to say that this, to see that this is not the same as that. Okay. So we looked at the situation where the erudite user will be unable to tell you what's wrong here. And here we're looking at a situation where somebody who knows nothing about it will be able to point out the differences. Now, these TLDs are being delegated by ICANN during what they call a fast-track process. There's ever so much to be said about the policy and the politics that have formed that fast-track. I won't comment on that unless you specifically ask later. However, there is a rule in the fast track. And that rule is if the name of your country is represented in one language and one language only, which the name of Chinese is Chinese. Okay. Well, it's Mandarin in this Cantonese too, but in this particular, the name of the Chinese government has one name for its country. The rule continues. One language, one script, one label. All right? Well, the Chinese come along and they say, okay, well, we use two scripts. We use simplified Chinese and we use traditional Chinese. So we need two labels. And here's where the Unicode stuff comes in again. The Unicode guys decided that simplified Chinese and traditional Chinese are a single script. that there are characters that are equivalent to other characters, but they have unified them. So they're called unified, the unified CJK ideograms. And CJK stands for Chinese, Japanese, and Korean. So the Chinese use these things, the Japanese use these things, and the Koreans use these things, and they have different names for them in the context of difference, but it's all the same. This would be identical to a situation where they might have said that the Greek alphabet, the Latin alphabet, and the Cyrillic alphabet are once, it's a single script, and we will assign a code point, we'll assign only one code point to the thing that looks like an O in each of them, and the ones that are different get separate code points. Now, the Chinese are in a position where they can argue with ICANN more persuasively than, say, Iran. Iran also has a problem. Iran uses the Arabic script, but there is a letter in the middle of the name of their country, Iran, that appears identically when used in, let's say, if that letter appears in the middle of a Persian word, it looks identical to the way it does when it's used in the middle of an Arabic word. But if it appears at the end of the word, it has a different form. So, if you're using a Persian keyboard and someplace in the Arabic-speaking world, you'll create the one of those things, and elsewhere you'll create the rest of it. And this is a real problem for the Iranian government, but the United States government is not currently that interested in helping the government of Iran through problems such as this. The Chinese have a similar problem, and the situation is different. The Chinese say, well, how many namespaces would you like there to be? We can do it right and have one single namespace, up to you that I can, or you know that we're prepared to push a button and then there will be two. So the compromise was that, okay, you'll get two labels for your TLD. The one of them is going to be in traditional Chinese characters, the other in simplified Chinese characters, and we expect you to regard these as, to operate them in synchronization. So the term synchronized TLDs was created to somehow designate the set of problems, the two different families of problems. Nobody can see the difference even if you know what we're talking about, and anybody can see the difference even if you don't know what we're talking about. Those two things can be treated, those problems, sets of problems can be solved in one way. Okay. And the Chinese agreed, okay, we want these things in the root. You want us to come up with some description of how to deal with the sameness problem, which you heard mentioned earlier today as well in this room. And the Chinese say, yeah, we'll figure it all out. Yeah. And then in these things go in the root. And what about the sameness problem that you were supposed to solve? Oh, no, we'll let the IETF solve that problem. And the IETF says, we'll think about solving a problem if someone can tell us what the problem is. And that's kind of where we are today. I mean, we're stuck there. Now, this fast-track queue is long. There are several dozen domains waiting for approval. At this point, 13 countries have managed to get into the route, several of them with multiple domains that are going to be, they're the same, kind of. Yeah. In some national situations, we have five official languages. We can't favor the one over the other. Each is written in a different script. So there's no problem there. The one language, one script, one label rule doesn't apply. So they've gotten away with it. And then there are other situations where there's more political and technical intricacy. This is it for my part of the presentation. But if you're interested in this, if you go to ICANN's website, and there's a click path to the fast track, and you'll find your way to the page which lists all of the labels that are now. I don't think I'm in a position where I can just click on this and get us there. But we can take a look at it at the end of the session if you're interested. And I suppose what this demonstrates, if there is any conclusion to be drawn here, is that any discussion of the intricacies of IDN on any label, on any level, but particularly on the TLD level, because that's what ICANN is most immediately worried about, is going to get stuck. If it gets stuck, it gets stuck in politics. It gets stuck in cultural issues. It gets stuck in linguistic issues. It does not get stuck in technical issues. And IDNA, Internationalized Domain Names in Applications, is essentially saying that we are not putting in the infrastructure. We are not, this is not DNS version 2, which would be a reasonable thing to do, but impossible to implement. Instead, we're going to provide a set of algorithms that applications developers can incorporate, which will do the translation, that stuff we looked at the outset, the U-label, A-label interconversion. And there is a U-label, A-label interconversion widely deployed in the software space, but it's the original IDNA, not the IDNA BIS, which is rolled out now. So the real problems that we're looking at from the technical side are seeing to it that the software developers understand what on earth the differences are, that this notion of sameness, what sameness? So the nice part about it is that it's actually unified the entire network community. Everybody is more or less equally confused. Yeah. With the exception of those of us who are fortunate enough to reside in Russia. So, and with that...
All right, so I'm Leonid Todorov from tld.ru, and, you know, I was asked to deliver a presentation on how we are dealing and we've dealt with the launch of RF thing, which stands for Russian Federation in Russian. Well, it's good to be here, and at this pedestal, you know, as any Russian, I appreciate the opportunity to use this pedestal probably to bang my shoes on it, but I will avoid this opportunity this time. Anyway, let me start, because it's kind of a practical experience we've already got during the preparation for and the launch of .RF. And that was quite a specific thing for Russia. First of all, let me just highlight on the background of the issue, because, you know, Russia currently is one of more or less developed countries internet-wise. For example, the internet penetration rate in two capital cities, which are Moscow and St. Petersburg, is around 74%, and in the regions is more or less like 30%. And that poses a challenge, especially in the light of the current, well, political situation. We cannot avoid politics in this whenever we talk about Russia. So just to give you some understanding how daunting the mission of ours was, let me just refer to this omnipotent state we live in. I mean, we live in the conditions of the managed democracy, with a very nascent civil society, which is publicly recognized even by our president. More than this, I mean, to get things worse, you know, this multi-stakeholderism, which is a very posh word nowadays, it's lost on Russia simply because we lack some major stakeholders. For example, civil society, as I mentioned, is very nascent. No community in that Western sense of the word. Plus, we lack academia who do some research in the area of the internet. There are no papers on that, to the best of my knowledge. And those that do exist are overly politicized and mostly attack the U.S. Governance over the internet. In Russia, we witness pretty much up-bottom approach, which is not what the internet community preaches. So simply, all the reforms in Russia since Ivan the Terrible and Peter the Great usually started from the top, not from the bottom. And currently, Russia, I don't know if you heard of that, but Russia is going to implement some kind of modernization. I don't know what it means in Russian terms, but they're obviously catching up with the most developed countries. So the internet is one of those priorities. It's high, I would say it's at top of the present government's agenda. Another important thing is that, while dealing with this internet on a daily basis, I always encounter that very specific mindset, which is Russia is a great country, it's still a superpower, so we have our own development path. And this implies very strong anti-American and anti-Western sentiments. Like, whatever emanates from the United States is bad. The United States always eye Russia as a kind of, a source of, natural resources, not more. So the internet itself and all issues around the internet are pretty much politicized in Russia. So it's hard to penetrate that shield which is being constantly built around all the issues as far as the internet is concerned. However, I would say that the Russian government exercises a very practical approach. They do understand that the internet is something unique, which cannot be controlled in those typical offline ways, nor can it be policed in the regular sense of this word. So its governance system, although pretty much unpleasant and unfamiliar to Russian policymakers, well, is still appreciated pretty much, and they exercise much caution when they treat these issues. So this is a very specific background which we tried to somehow overcome while launching this RF domain. So just a quick fact sheet about .ru and .rf, because now we enjoy this privilege to run two national domains. Well, let them call so. So you see that both domains are administered by Coordination Center for TLD.ru. This is non-profit, independent, non-government organization, which is good. Of course, we use different scripts for these two domains. You can see it. We use Russian Cyrillic when it comes to RF, and we use this Latin SASC for .ru. And we just recently hit that 3 million second-level domains mark with .ru, and we have more than 18,000 second-level domains in .rf, of which some 30% are already functional. The growth rate of .ru was quite impressive last year, and by contrast, you know, that Chinese national domain was down by some 70%, if I'm not mistaken. And that the growth rate, projected growth rate for this year is like 30%. Well, we hope that, and this is just by mistake, I'm sorry, we hope that by year 2011, there will be some substantial growth in .rf zone. We will see some estimates later. Now, as you can see, we started this project as a, another Porsche word, public-private partnership. We couldn't escape that, of course, because, you may have heard that the incumbent Russian president is pretty much in favor of internet and all these telecommunication technologies. So the prime minister addressed the Ministry of Telecommunications, which is our principal counterpart in the government, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, with that task to promote Russian language throughout the internet in the internet addressing system, and that was back in the year 2008. So I must say that in this case, we had all the support from the government. And that helped us enormously, because you understand that from the very beginning, as soon as the fast track procedure was established, there was some race. Russia was competing with some other countries to pioneer these very specific development. And you must agree that of those four countries that were awarded with their IDNs, three were those Arabic countries, and probably they enjoyed that advantage of sort of streamlining communication with the government. For example, if the ruler or whoever he is on the top has his son as a minister of telecommunications while his grandson runs a national registry, it's much easier to build this trust and cooperation with the government than for us. But again, thanks God, we were doing we got along with the government very smoothly. So we were following a pretty tight schedule, and as you can see, we got all the approvals, and we made a quite risky bet as far as the delegation of RF domain is concerned. So by 13th of May, we were really lucky to be one of those four nations to be awarded with the IDN. And we immediately started what we call priority reservation for the government needs prior to the delegation. That is a very specific issue in Russia. I will get in more details on this. And you can see that the 11th of November this year is a very critical date, because then we're going to launch this open registration in .rf, which doesn't mean land rush, but it's really an open registration phase. We make it available for everyone. And we hope that by June year 2011, there will be, 100,000 second-level domains in .rf, which will be quite a substantial growth. So, priority reservation for the government needs. Well, again, I should just explain in greater detail, because Russia is, by its constitution, by its structure, is a federative state. We have 83 regions, provinces, if you will, we probably are the world champion in this regard. Plus, we have another 8 super regions, which are kind of at top of those 83 regions, and each including, let's say, up to 10 or even 12 simple regions. Another important thing is that within those regions, there are what we call some matryoshka regions. Like, we have an oil-rich region in which there are another 2 regions which are also what we call subjects of the federation. They have their own parliaments, they have their own governments, and they have every right to apply for their own second-level domains. So, for whom that right was awarded? First of all, federal executive bodies and legislative bodies and judicial bodies. Plus, we have some other federal institutions which are not exactly what we call the government, but you would agree that the central bank and the pension fund, the state pension fund, are also, in a sense, federal agencies. Plus, we included all the regions as well as their capital cities, and state symbols. For example, you would agree that the president is a kind of state symbol. But in Russia's modern history, we have already 4 presidents, including Mikhail Gorbachev, the former president of the USSR. So they all were awarded with those second-level domains. And we also had very special, I mean, we set up very special procedures and rules for that. So there was a limited time period during which all these agencies could apply for their domain names, respective domain names. And that was administered by the coordination center, by us, just to avoid any confusion. So we still run this very specific list. And also we have in Russia more than 80,000 municipalities who, of course, were keen to receive their domain names. But, again, to avoid any confusion, we sort of crossed them out of that list simply to focus on those 500 critical agencies. Another complex issue was that we were not just going to to introduce those domain or reserve those domain names for those agencies, but also for their critical functions. And that was another issue. In Russia, you know, every ministry has in Sweden, every ministry, every agency has its own specific functions, which may not correspond to their names. So that was another critical issue. But we managed to do so. And we started that sunrise period, in tandem, practically simultaneously, with the priority reservation for the government needs. Again, we've seen a lot of challenges down the road, but we couldn't foresee all of them. That's why on every stage we had to modify these procedures for trademark holders and owners. As you see, at the first stage we decided that, well, it would be just enough to grant or to guarantee only Cyrillic trademarks, domain names for Cyrillic trademarks. And you see this is the Russian search engine Yandex. But then there were claims and complaints from some other trademark owners, including those trademarks which have been made in both in Cyrillic and non-Cyrillic script, and we did that, then transliterated, and that concerned many international companies, for example, operating in Russia, and then made as a graphic representation with inclusion of all the elements, then corporate names. You can see that ZAO here stands for joint stock company. So we had to do that as well. And then, of course, those owners of exclusive right using the appellation of origin of the good, which was also critical, and then non-for-profits, and then the federal media, because we've got a lot of newspapers. They haven't died as yet. As it was predicted, they have another 5 to 10 or 30 years to go. So that all was critical, and on every stage we had to modify these rules. We made them public so that everyone concerned could apply. Now, what were the benefits as we can foresee them at the present stage after the priority reservation stage is over for the government? Well, first of all, the government now feels that its brands online are more or less protected. The project itself, as it was a very complex project, it's not just about ideology or linguistics, it's also concerns infrastructure. So infrastructure-wise, we had to upgrade our infrastructure, our core infrastructure, and it was made in time. And as the Ministry for Telecommunication was consequently brandishing that, without attraction, I'm just translating this literally from that bureaucratic Russian language, without attraction of public funds. So that was sponsored by us and by Russian IT businesses. So that was a kind of new experience in the area of public-private partnership in upgrading the national infrastructure. And also, this is a very important point, that was another experience, or probably one of the first one, in communicating and collaborating with the national what is called civil society in Russia. Again, it's nascent, but it's still there. because, you know, I just skipped that. I'm sorry, I just skipped that at the beginning. When we started that RF thing, the name of the string by itself should be meaningful according to the ICANN's procedures. So RF stands for Российская Федерация, which is, it's easy to guess, Russian Federation. So that name was voted for and selected by the users. There was an online poll, and they voted for different names, of which RF was clearly the best one. And also, that included some endorsement from the, again, according to the ICANN, the fast-track procedures, that was to include an endorsement from the national recognized, internationally recognized linguistic authority. So they proved that RF means something for Russian, and it's a proper and meaningful identification abbreviation for Russian Federation, and it is not confused with any other abbreviation of this type. So, a new level of preparedness for e-government. Well, that's a kind of tricky thing for Russia, because we understand that everybody now is keen to introduce e-government, although some of us, especially in Russia, have no idea what it is. But our Minister of Telecommunications went so far as to suggest that there should be a very special email system, totally Cyrillic, just for the government needs. I don't know how they will sort it out, but still some work on this is being in progress. And also, which is important for Russia, for that imperial mindset, we understand that there are 140 million Russians living in Russia. Plus, we have quite a substantial number of Russian-speaking population worldwide, in the United States, in Israel, in some other countries, as well as in the former USSR republics. So that's probably the best way to solidify that Russian identity worldwide, just to have them use the Russian script on the internet. So, there might be as well certain benefits for businesses and the users, because, you know, all this stuff which is you may have be familiar with. It's like, you know, new quality of the domain namespace, possibility of choice for users. Yeah, indeed, we can key in both in Latin and in Russian while using this internet addressing system. More than that, I have to confess, you know, usually I use, English keyboard, and I'm used to this much more than that that Cyrillic keyboard. Well, now I understand that it's much more convenient even for me to use all these, you know, Russian letters. When I'm just keying them in, it's faster and it's much more convenient. So I use it already. So for corporations, it might be a very good chance to promote their brands online. We will see to this. It still needs some time. Localization, that's obvious. Optimization of navigation, again, the same, although there might be some problems which Carrie just mentioned that. Boost to creativity, innovation, and competition online. Well, there might be as well some examples. I mean, I will highlight on a couple of them later on, but obviously, as far as good names, I mean, domain names in .ru have already long gone, there might be new opportunities for especially small-sized businesses to establish themselves in that RF zone. Usually I cite very simple example. There is a famous Russian beet soup which is called borscht. But in Latin letters, it can be spelled in 8 different ways and maybe as long as 8 letters. While in Russian, it's simple. It's just 4 letters, so you won't make a mistake in this regard. Now, some interesting things about about our experiences, immediate experiences. Well, first of all, as you can see, we have very strict registration rules, and which means that we should somehow skip all the obscenities in Russian language. You might be interested as well to know that back in 1911, the first dictionary of rough Russian words was published. At the time, it comprised 30,000 entries. I mean, the words which cannot under any circumstances be pronounced in any decent audience or in the presence of that decent audience. Well, over time, under the communist rule, I mean, some people obviously had some reasons to curse that government, that communist government, government more than ever. The dictionary was growing, and now it's like a two-volume edition. So we tried to go through that and identify as many as 4,000 plus words which may not be well pronounced anywhere under any circumstances. So we put them in stop list. As for the others, we will see how we will deal with them. But for example, sex, RF, has been registered indeed, although it's kind of tricky word in Russian. We are not that open and outspoken about sex. Anyway, so it was, as you can see, it was registered simply because it concerned absolutely different thing, which is bitch stuff. Well, we couldn't avoid it by our rules. That was a huge scandal. There were a flood of letters to the government, to the president, to ourselves, with that, very strong request urging us to immediately block that and to cross it out of our registry. Well, we couldn't do that. Now,
is that cyrillic?
Well, I put it in deliberately in Latin letters, but originally it's in Cyrillic. Sex, it's four letters in Russian. It's it's kind of, for your convenience. Otherwise, you wouldn't recognize that word. Now, a more typical case involved all those disputes over trademarks. Like, you can see that the Silver Rain radio, which is very popular in Russia, was really infuriated by someone who has registered that trademark under absolutely different category of goods. Again, we couldn't do anything about that. But these disputes, we expect more of them to arise. And, just 2 days ago, I guess, for the first time ever, the high, I guess, arbitration court, I have it on my computer, ruled that, for example, although it's a bit different story, but they established a precedent that swatch.ru, which is in Latin, was awarded eventually to the trademark owner, which is that Swiss corporation. And it was taken from a private individual, although that private individual claimed that he never used that domain for any commercial purposes. Still, the High Arbitration Court ruled that this domain name is an integral part of the corporate trademark, and there shouldn't be any other user but Swatch. That's Swiss corporation. I guess this is a very significant milestone in the development of both zones, both national zones. So anyway, there will be more things about that, but this is very interesting. As I've already mentioned, the media was given some kind of preference. Electronic media, more than that. And one of Russian agencies in charge of media, let's put it in such a way, drew our attention to the fact that there was a growing number of applications for registration of electronic media. And some of them, as you can see, Vodka RF, potentially are very attractive. I mean, business, as far as business is concerned. And the same with Books RF and Construction RF, which is in Russian, Knigi RF, Строительство RF. So they concern certain sectors or industries, but those were registered as electronic media. And you can see that a flood of such application was coming from certain sources. Like you can see that a small town, a certain resident of a certain town applied for 64 domain names in this regard. So we had to modify these registration rules. So we set kind of date for registration, with the government agency of such names earlier than they actually applied for these domain names. So we built another safeguard. And then there was that sharp decline in newly submitted applications, and also people started withdrawing their applications. They obviously realized that they wouldn't have these names. So that was a very interesting development, very specific, I believe, but I believe that this is a kind of very special cyber squattering attempt. And here is what I like. Speaking of creativity, this is what I like. As you can see, the footnote, I put that in English because whatever combination of words was used to stake up these very attractive, potentially very attractive domain names in Russian, it doesn't matter, because they had no sense. And you can see that, for example, weather or F, I wouldn't really pronounce that Russian analog. But still, you can see that it has nothing to do with the domain name. Still, we had to register them, because that was an official protected trademark. So what could we do about that? You can see that. And Porno RF, I believe this is a very, very creative approach, and this is a very good stuff. So what are basic lessons that we can draw from this launch of RF? Well, first of all, we tried that multi-stakeholder approach, and it worked. Well, of course, these were very minor organizations involved into that, but still, we believe that this is just a start for this process of multi-stakeholderism to emerge, to grow. We hope to foster that by all means. We also treated this project as a business one. Again, it was highly politicized, and it attracted a lot of attention from the government, from the law enforcement agencies, from the general public, but we tried to keep it pretty much business as usual. Now, we had to deal with the ICANN and the IANA. I believe that we should give them due credit for being so cooperative and helping us enormously. But I also understand that for them it was also a kind of test bed, so they were really keen to deliver on what they initially produced, what is known now as a fast-track procedure. So we had, or we were compelled, whatever, to make this government needs and trademark owners' right a priority. I think it's a quite justifiable approach, because there should be certain categories which should be given some priority in this respect. We tried, as you would imagine, the offline law in Russia is still underdeveloped. But we were trying to create, to set up that legal framework which would enable us to operate flawlessly, just to protect ourselves from some, excessive lawsuits or whatever. And it worked, basically. So there were the best and brightest lawyers involved into that. And that being developed, I would say, on that pretty much civil society-based approach. So they volunteered for that work. They were not paid for that. They helped us enormously. Again, cyber squattering, of course, is a fundamental challenge, and we have to cope with this every time, and I foresee that there will be more attempts to cyber squatter this .RF zone in the future. So in this regard, we have to communicate, and we do communicate with our peers overseas, where we can find some adequate models which we can borrow and which we can apply in Russia. Again, all these registration or reservation procedures are not there forever as they are at the moment. We are ready to modify them, and we have every right to modify them, so that to respond to all these new challenges that may arise in the future. And of course, we try to, as much as we can, to take into account the community's feedback. The problem, though, is that the community itself is very diverse. Businesses, private users, and they all feel upset. They are not happy with certain procedures. They try to change the scene. You know, in Russia, again, with that nascent civil society, with that quite imperfect judicial system, our people tend to write directly to the president. It doesn't make sense to write to us. So they write to the president something like, "Dear Mr. President, I know that you're an internet fan. Could you please order them to change those rules?" And I must say that we receive sometimes these letters from the presidential administration with some request, if you could please draft an answer to this gentleman or that lady. So I believe that in this sense, the presidential administration, the president himself, the government, they took a very pragmatic approach. They do understand that they are not in a position to run the Russian internet. More than that, they often go public and say that the Russian internet should not be regulated. So they do not interfere with our business, so that we could exercise our powers, our mandate in full. And I believe that we are in touch with all these end users as much as we can, but we also understand that it's just impossible to meet everybody's demand. So there should be some limitations, and we try to produce some very well-grounded responses to all these, to all those who are not satisfied with what we're doing now. And a very interesting question. So what's going to happen with that .ru and .rf in the future? Because, again, will there be any competition, or will they just coexist? It's hard to say at the moment, really hard to say at the moment. Will the audience split into those who will still use that Latin, something like .ru, and those who will continue to use .rf? That's probably a very interesting case. As I've already mentioned, we have quite a number of people, or I didn't mention that, we have quite a number of people who do not understand English at all. They have, of course, much trouble with keying in Latin letters. It will be much easier for them to use that RF simply because that addressing stuff will be much easier for them to use. So I believe those are mostly the elderly citizens, children probably. So perhaps we will contribute with this RF thing in bridging that digital divide, especially in the region. And speaking of that synergy effect, because sometimes some people would say, do you expect that the launch of this RF zone will give a big boost to RU. Yes, indeed, that's taken place already. As you can see, last year we had an enormous growth in .RU zone. When I asked some people why, the answer was, well, you know, we grew up in the Soviet times in the economy of shortages. So probably some people are guided or misguided with that sensation that perhaps they started that RF thing just because they are running out of domain names in RU. I mean, in RU. So it would be smart to sort of set up that account in, I mean, to set up that domain name in RU just in case. Otherwise, they would miss it. Or there might be some market opportunities. We're still expecting in Russia, you know, unlike Sweden, everything depends on how big corporations behave. If they feel that this is necessary, that this is kind of a new marketing instrument, and I bet they are exploring these opportunities now. And if they are keen to get their respective domain names, and some of them already done that, so I believe small and medium-sized businesses and end users will just follow them, because that will be another way of promoting themselves on the internet. So I guess that is it. And you can see that now we have cctld.ru, or you can just log on KC, which is koordinationcenter.rf. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Any questions or comments? You're welcome to say things that don't end with question marks. That's...
Are there minorities not using Cyrillic languages?
Well, yeah, to the best of my knowledge, no. But this is a very interesting question, because we have something like 120 ethnic groups in Russia. They all use Russian alphabet. I mean, Cyrillic alphabet. Although they have their own very specific letters, like in Tatar language, they have additional six letters in some other languages as well. So this is one of the issues we are just contemplating now on. Yes, please.
A question to Gary. If I understand you correctly, you kind of think that the fast track was too fast. So my question is the problem too big that you have to go back? Because what I've seen is there's some benefits in it. It's starting something.
There are at least three things I could say to this, and I'm biting my tongue. There's one thing the thing that I want to say most, I'm not going to say. Okay. There are two problems with the fast track. Okay. The one is that they forgot to figure out how to end it. So the fast track is something that is going to remain. If somebody wants an IDNTLD, if they can figure out how to justify it in fast track terms, they're welcome to ask for it, even when the window is wide open for applications for GTLDs. So the fast track was supposed to be, exactly as you say, a good way to get some IDN CCTLDs in the root in situations where there was no possible contention. And my personal feeling is that the process itself is contentious. So there is no the fast track trips on its own rules. The idea behind it is absolutely reasonable. And the outcome, again, speaking purely in terms of personal opinion, the outcome is some very reasonable situations. I mean, there was a problem with the Russian localized TLD, and the big problems too, and they were resolved just fine. There are other situations where people are just waiting. When is this going to work? Well, as soon as we figure out as soon as we have the solution for the sameness problem, you'll be okay. So it's not fair, the fast track. There's controversy in every single instantiation. The problem, it's not one problem, there are many problems, and I personally believe that the easiest way to do it is to recognize the fact that every request will be judged on its own merit, not against some predetermined set of rules. And there's a limitation anyway. You have to be on the 3166 list in order to participate. Okay? That's reasonable enough. It's an objective principle. But why are the Latin alphabet is used for more different languages on this planet than any other character set. Yeah. But you can't use it. Let's assume that it wasn't Sverige, but Svorje with an O. Yeah. Too bad. Yeah. Why? So it's arbitrary, and that bothers me. It's noble, and that pleases me. Is that a good answer?
I don't know. Yeah? I mean, just like going back some time and the test bed on second level,
mm-hmm.
Well, we ended up in recoding a lot of stuff. The mm-hmm. very same test bed, which is yeah. what was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. It ended up in something that was defined from idea to my understanding as the standard on second level. But that was an exercise.
Mm-hmm.
We learned from that.
Yeah.
And I actually think that if we should wait for the perfect solution, we will be waiting for decades or something like that.
Well, the mistake is the belief that there is a solution. There's a solution if there is a problem. There is not a problem. Name a language, name a script, that's one problem. Name another language and another script, that's another problem. That this has to be dealt with case by case. That doesn't make it easier, but it's the only, what I regard as reasonable approach. And instead, there are these broad concepts that everything somehow has to fit into. And that's just not the way it works. There's a reason why there are 6,500 languages still surviving, and that's a smaller number than ever before. That 5,000 years ago, there were a lot more than 6,500 languages. And each one of them has its own unique set of interests, problems, difficulties mapping into an IETF protocol, which, and keep in mind, IDNA says, we admit that we can't solve this problem, any version of this problem, in the DNS itself. So we need to have something external to the DNS. Yeah. And then one of ICANN's policy-making bodies, the CCNSO, the Country Code Names Supporting Organization, their purpose is to devise and support ICANN policy through what's called a policy development process. Okay. They have used that authority to exempt themselves from the policy development process. That because we get to speak about policy development, we're going to say, well, we're in a hurry here, so we're not going to bother with policy development. And I don't really see how that makes a lot of sense. Either we are doing this on the basis of consensus policies that truly reflect what the community wishes, or some interest group gets to be stronger than some other interest group. And that's what I don't like about the fast track, actually. A policy guardian is saying, I don't have to adhere to my own policies, and gets away with it. But the ultimate result is good. I mean, it's great that there are these IDN TLDs in the room. Yeah. And we are going to learn from it. There are problems that we haven't spoken about. I can name one. The Russian dictionary, Cyrillic, every word in it is already a label in .com. So president.rf, which is the grand one. Okay, if you took president, Cyrillic.rf, in a browser that never heard of RF, the browser guys get paid by VeriSign to support to default to .com. So you're going to go to president.com. And it's going to resolve, it's going to take you somewhere. And if the person who has president.com decides that they want to clone president.rf but have sneaky links in it, they can do it. And everyone whose language is already on the second level in .com is going to see this happening. And that's going to be a real problem. You think you've seen phishing problems before? There's a whole new world out there. Yeah. And this is why the fast track itself is contentious, that there are problems doing what we're doing. And you can't say, well, we don't need policies because we're only going to do the things that don't have any problems associated with them. I can't accept that. But it's not up to me. I wasn't involved in that. I was an advisor during the course of the process on substantive issues, and my personal opinion hasn't weighed into it. That's not important. But since you're asking me personally what I think, this is what I think. Yeah. So it's an important thing. We need to do this, but we're not doing it the right way. Andre, here's.
Question and a comment to Leonid about what you said about post-Soviet Soviet-style approach, but generally domaining is about shortages and everyone just registers domain in case. And actually TLD with 3 million domains, of course it depends on the language. So for example in German you can connect the words and let's say the TLD can contain more good generic phrases than Polish language or Russian one. And actually what I see that when TLD reaches about 1 million domains, it becomes a problem to find not good, but good enough generic names. And with .ru with 3 million domains, it's great that you have RF. And this is what I see in Poland, that now there is a lot of switch to .eu, because if you want a generic name, there is no way you can register a good name under .pl, so the only choice now is .eu, sometimes .com, so you are in a good position that you have .rf, and some people can go there and still get some names, and I'm curious if those RU and RF will grow simultaneously. So someone will register ASCII version of the domain and certain privates. I see this in Poland, but actually Polish characters, special characters, is just about accents and hooks, and it's not a big challenge. So the Polish IDNs are just equivalents of something good, which is normally sold together with ASCII version. So I'm curious how this RF will grow in comparison with RU.
Well, frankly, I have no clear answer, because with the start of that open registration phase, I believe we will just come to some more or less reasonable projections. Right now it's just too premature to judge that. I believe that this is a very niche project. There might be a great interest in Russian regions, not so much exposed to latent characters. For certain categories of the population, it might be interesting as well. For new users who might be keen to register both, their domains in .ru and .rf, it's hard to say. This 100,000 mark is, I would say, is a speculation, of course. But we just try to extrapolate those growth rates we've already noticed during the previous stages onto the future. Perhaps we were too cautious, and it might be a greater number of domain names by June 2011, who knows. But I believe as a niche project, it will find its audience, it will find quite a number of end users. And also, it's important to understand, as I've already stressed, it's important to understand how much businesses will contribute to this growth. Because, again, the problem is in Russia, it's a highly monopolized market. Well, not monopolized, but dominated by big players. And these big players dictate the rules of the game. So the number of these small-sized businesses operate mostly on a local level, grassroots level. So if they find it interesting, if they just benefit from some immediate results, then probably they will be keen to expand in that RF zone. It's just up to market to decide.
Okay. Stena and then Mats. The EAI? It's a separate IETF working group, and I don't pay particularly close attention to what they're doing, but I don't know if anybody else here does. But I don't think we're quite there yet. We still have that problem. Okay.
Maybe you said it, but do you permit ASCII labels on the RF or Cyrillic only?
Well, tricky question. I'm no technician. Let me think it over. I guess it's Cyrillic only. That's my understanding.
Okay.
It's Cyrillic only.
Yeah,
I guess so. But I need to check that, to double check this.
I just had a question out of curiosity, because you were saying you tend to use a Latin keyboard.
Yeah.
But how is it the general user
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Exactly. Because, again, the problem is that during the Soviet time and afterwards, the educational system, permitted everyone to study foreign languages, English mostly. At the same time, the quality of education was absolutely incomparable to what you guys have in Sweden here. So some basic words, some basic phrases, yes, that what were the people were allowed to study. Not more than that. Plus, they were pretty much ideological, like labor movement, the May Day, the Revolution Day. Everything was sort of biased, I would say. No practical experience in using a Latin keyboard, although every PC we have in Russia has actually, it's a bilingual keyboard there. But again, people tend to use mostly Russian version. I mean, Cyrillic version. So they prefer it over that Latin one. So they are absolutely inexperienced in that, believe me. I would say, right now, of course, with Russia gradually getting more exposed to Western realities, more people traveling, more people studying abroad, the situation is changing, but again, in terms of the population on the whole, it's just a handful of these people. So for Russians, it's much more easier, of course, to key in Cyrillic letters, I mean, overall. So I guess that's an enormous tool for them, and they will just go surfing much more frequently now when they just realize that there is such an opportunity. Again, it depends very much on how many second-level domains will be, at the end of the day, by June 2010, in this RF zone. Otherwise, it will be a very narrow niche project again.
One final question. Who wants it? Nobody. All right. Thank you all for your attention.
Thank you.